Mr. Chadwick, Reel 14. Now, we've got to the point where you returned to England. You'd been sent home because you'd been out that long. And you said you got back to England on the 24th of December 1947. Off tape, that was. Was there anything about the journey home, or was it just a routine?
Routine. I think if I remember rightly, the troop ship was the MDO Toronto. Sailed from Piraeus to... Southampton. Piraeus to Southampton. And then proceeded on 3 weeks leave. Christmas and New Year.
How was it being back home after all this time?
I don't know. I seem to fall into it quite. I think by virtue of the fact that everybody was still war-minded and was so used to comings and goings, there was no euphoria. It was just a trip home and getting ready for going back again, Saturday. Not as if you were coming home to stay at home. It was part of the job. Just a quick visit and back you kicked off again. After 3 weeks' holiday, I went back to the DLI depot at Bramsford. Sat there really idling for 2 or 3 weeks. Then dispatched to the lighting brigade centre at Borden, which was the marshalling area for the light infantry, and awaiting the posting, but outside the country. The only light infantry battalion at the time abroad, apart from the Durhams, was the KOYY in Malaya.
Now, why abroad?
Because I just... soldiering in the UK wasn't my forte at all. I couldn't do years and years the same routine. Drill, weapon training, exercise, guard duties. I was much preferred being in the field at the time.
And why couldn't you have gone back to the 1st Battalion?
Could have done. I could have sat there until they came home.
They were on their way home, were they?
Well, they were following up a couple of months later. But they were going to a place called Monkton Farley. I just forget, it's something of a culture stuff in that area. Garrison, which made it worse, where you live in, you go out, you socialise with it. It wasn't my scene, not at that age. So fortunately, I was very friendly with the drafting sergeant at Borden, and it took him a couple of months, but he managed to work it for me, and I went out with a draft of about 30.
And who were you to join?
The KOYY.
Which battalion?
1st Battalion.
Now, that was leaving the Durhams. Did you see this as a permanent break?
Oh, no. Fully intended going back to them. But it was a chance to go to the Far East, where I've never been before. And I wanted to get as much of that. That was one of the reasons I was serving in the forces, to see the world, not Colchester. I didn't envision that at all.
What do you remember the trip out?
Pretty uneventful. We had the normal sport there, the odd boxing matches, deck games, PT. But being an individual draft, as opposed to a battalion, you're pretty well left alone. So they do become a long journey. And I think at that time, it was taking 4.5 to 5.5 weeks. To get to Singapore. I think the ship was, well, I know the ship, it was the Halliday of the Central Jury ships, all the Empire boats that were taken over from the Germans with the small portholes.
And had you had any special kit given to you or anything, before you went out, or were you to be equipped when you got there?
We took olive green with us.
What's olive green? Your uniform, you mean?
Well, it's more of a khaki drill. It's a tropical year. So that after Gibraltar, we went out, I think, approximately about June. And, of course, from Gib onwards, you got the heat. So you needed tropical gear. So you went into your olive green instead of the old days, you should be khaki drill. For the Middle East, the Far East was olive drab, olive green.
And that's June 1948. You were home about 6 months, were you?
Yes, 48.
Now, where did you land?
Singapore. And then all troops arriving in Singapore, we spent 48 hours or so at Nee Soon Transit Camp. That's the dispersal point.
And what were your initial impressions of the Far East, well, Singapore?
Well, fascinated. First time in the Far East, the Mystic East. It was still a bit mystic then, not like it is today, a village of the world. Quite excited. I'm looking forward to getting up country to where we were based. I think after only 48 hours and maybe 3 to 4 days at the outside, then we entrained for Penang. And the barracks of them days was called Kruger Barracks.
How do you spell that?
G-L-U-G-O-R. Kruger. But later transferred to Minden Barracks for the KOII, because Minden is their battle hammer.
So, were they at Kluger Barracks when you arrived?
They were at Kluger Barracks in Penang.
And what were your initial impressions on? I mean, you've been used to the DLI. What were your initial impressions on joining?
It's a bloody good question, because prior to us arriving, about 150 Durham Light Infantrymen had been posted from the Durham Light Infantry 2nd Battalion, who had just gone home. But these youngsters hadn't been out long enough to go back, so they were transferred to the KYLI. Now, at night time in the barrack rooms, you had from one barrack room, the Bladen races, and from the other barrack room was Jockey to the Fair. And there was a bit of tension, actually, among the troops. Nothing had come behind it, but it took a while for the acceptance of the DLI, as is understandable. Bearing in mind, the commanding officer then, Colonel Brown, Colonel Windy Brown, he was referred to with one arm. I think I'm right in saying he was ex-DLI originally. But after a period of 4 or 5 weeks, things started to level down. But the thing that helped most was within a week of my arrival, everything seemed to take off.
Now, when you joined, before we get up, during the week, when you first got there, what position were you, what company were you put in, or were you made provost sergeant, or what happened?
Well, I went straight to a rifle company, D Company, 1st Battalion KYLI, platoon sergeant.
Which platoon, do you remember?
Obviously can't remember the number.
Who was your officer, do you remember that?
Yeah, Nick, seems to know all the answers, Peter. The company commander was Major Haycock. Haycock. I liked him extremely well. The company sergeant major, and I'm saying this with the greatest respect, was a complete lunatic. And he used to refer to the KYLI as the Bombay Home Guard. They'd been out there donkey's years, and they'd never been caught up like I was with Lilo. They've been let, some of them have done 12 and 13 years. And Jim was a strange man.
In what way?
It's incredible. He would turn to me and he'd make a comment like, in his very stupid voice, really, although I liked him at the end of the day, put the gladiators in the amphitheatre. That was get the troops out for a drill program. Now, when he was teaching slow march, he would be running at the troops, shouting, Bella, you gossip. Bella, you gossip. Never heard it in my life before. For the pace, instead of left, right. And then if something went wrong, he'd throw his hat in the air and jump on it. And I say, I still liked him. And a couple of years later, when he actually returned to the United Kingdom, he was discharged. He couldn't handle squad in England. He had the Duke Lally tap. Now, whether he had it before he went over there, I don't know. But he was such a strange. Everybody, Jig Fox, Jay Fletcher, Jim Fletcher, all he ever got was everybody knew Jig Fox. I had to go to his company. But we got on all right. But our relationship was very short and sweet because the troubles kicked up fairly overnight.
How did you fit in with your platoon when you first got there?
I've never had any problem fitting in anywhere.
Were they mainly national servicemen, or were they regulars, or what was?
Majority would be national service. Majority. Most of the NCOs would be regulars. Not all, but the majority of the troops would be NS.
And what did you think of them as NS on meeting them there?
Well, soldiers are soldiers wherever you get them. As long as I feel, if the threat as adults, they'll act as adults. A lot of the NCOs, even I said the same about me, but in my opinion, a lot of the people who did get three stripes on the line, and after all, you're not keeping a man as a son, it went to the head. They were talking not to them, but above them. And it doesn't work. And until they realise that, they don't get the best of them. But I have no problems at all with any of them. And I think, mainly, I like to think I knew my job and did it as well as I could. I think that helps. And secondly, they could talk to me at my level, and I talk to them at their level. It was as simple as that.
Now, you say after a week or so, it all kicked off. What do you mean it all kicked off? Could you explain the situation and what was going on?
Yes. It kicked away initially. When you look back with hindsight and read up the things that the average soldier, or officer for that matter, doesn't know, what's going on 2 years before or at the end of the war. And it was all this build-up from the end of the war. But the pattern that we saw was the rioting in Georgetown, in Penang. And all that we knew we were doing, we were going down every morning about 6 o'clock with pickaxes. And we were holding back these rioters, coming back at 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock, which was tiring. Especially, you were only just getting climatised. And that went on for...
What can you describe a typical one where you go down? So you'd be armed with
pickaxes, staves,
just so,
well, you get crowds gathering, you disperse them.
And what were the crowds doing? And how many?
Soapbox jobs, shouting.
Were they armed?
What?
Would they be armed at all?
They weren't armed. Saps and staves, anything they could pick.
And how many of them, roughly?
Varied. the first few days, every time they went to break up a little consortium, or call it what they like, they'd disperse, throw brickets at you and run away. And then as the days went on, they weren't moving as easily. They were stopping to put up the fight, and it was getting more vicious. And at the same time, then the shooting started. Because we were on Penang Island, and to get to the mainland, you've got to go across the valley to Butterworth. Now, this is where the trouble was started. And the odd plant was being shot. And to the best of my knowledge, within a period of 3 weeks, it wasn't the odd planter, it was a lot of planters.
Now this is the period, it all started in June 1948, which is when you arrived. Can I just ask, when you were dealing with the crowds, would you use the staves or just threaten with them? Or was it a mixture?
Like everybody says, they came for your protection, and you only use them if somebody attacks you. But being young men, being fit, and a human being, when you're patience is getting a little exhausted and you're getting tired, you are liable to lash out when it wasn't necessary, most likely. But you weren't killing people. It was a clout and a way out. There's one little story I could tell you, which is quite humorous regarding that. After a very heavy day out there, coming back to camp, we got off the trucks and it was a very long walk from where you debussed to get back to your nest. And as we were going up the road, we saw, as people say today, a mixed race man darting in amongst the trees. So we went and arrested him physically and threw him in the clink. And I said, when I get myself James and pulled together, I'll write a holding charge. Take it from there tomorrow. Had a shower, sat down and wrote me notes. Sent the charger on to the guard room to hold them there and went for a meal. And then into the mess after for a drink. Now, the RSM there, that Big Bill monument, incidentally, his wife was the only white woman in the Sarge mess. They were all Anglo-Burmese, Anglo-Indian, or Dirk Harley. He sent for me, not as he had a lot to do with me, very, very nice man, actually. And he said, look, did you have an affray when you came into Ballocks this afternoon? Oh, I said, yeah, I said, I caught one of these rioters stalking in the barracks, banged him in. He said, well, one of those rioters you've arrested is a member of our married family. So it was one of the girls. And we could have manhandled him. You know, we give him a couple of shrugs and pushes. But he wasn't turned up. But as I say, Mrs. Monument was the only white lady in the mess, in that Sarge mess at that time. They were very nice, weren't they? But they'd been out there that long, peacetime then. They'd married these Burma girls when they were up in Burma. They'd married the Indian girls when they were up in India. And they'd travelled around with them ever since.
So this situation, you were, at this time, you were just going from the barracks into the square, St. George's Square, and hold
Georgetown,
sorry. And you were just controlling rioting. Now, you said that they started bits and bobs of shooting at you.
Not shooting at us. Shooting planters. The planters. Now, I'd like to tell you this, Peter. Our relationship with the rubber tappers and planters wasn't good. The British of the rank and the planters I won't be frank about it. That's an understatement. It wasn't good. It was bloody awful. We weren't allowed in there close. That was for sure. Irrespective of what rank you were, unless you were commissioned at that stage. The majority of them I found, bucket seeing them, shipping match. The majority were Australians. And if you remember, these men had just arrived back in Malaya in the preceding 6 months after being prisoners of war because they were all rounded up in the Malayan campaign. They'd just been home, rehabilitated, and come out again to start again. And of course, just as they came out, the trouble started. But fortunately for them, 3 to 4 months later, they were accepting us with open arms, because it's the only way they were going to stay alive, by cooperating with the British soldiers. But we had a few very nasty incidents where we would go out and guard a planted bungalow while they had a party. Understandable. That was their social life. And we would disperse around the building and make sure there was no one attacked or shot. And after that, it built up to a more friendly relationship.
So, now, what were the sort of unpleasant incidents? Can you give an example?
Well, I used to like to wonder, when the troubles started at that level, we then moved from Penang across to Butterworth and dispersed there, and the headquarters being at Kew Lane. So by now, we're all dispersed onto plantations, where we were getting familiarised with the local terrain, and we were guarding the local planters. At a minute's notice, we had a flying squad, and fortunately, I was lucky. Most of my time, I never had a platoon commander. I was a platoon commander. So I was in charge of my own destiny, which was great.
So what were these incidents?
Or news.
But what sort of thing? I can't get...
What, we're shooting at planters?
No, I mean, how were the planters unpleasant to you?
Well, I'll give you one. Bucket seed. Social party going on. So I went there with 11 men. And I'll tell you his name. And it's Captain Burgess. I'm 10. One cable light patrol reports and said, well, I'm the party from, it goes dark about 4 past 6 in the air every night. There's no winter, summer, autumn, spring, the same. So we to get in ambush positions and lie there and wait. You make common sense for there, you can talk a little. There's all this music going on anyway. And this particular night, come about 9 o'clock, I got up and went up to the planter's bungalow and the sun came out. And I asked him whether any refreshments for my lads were out there, maybe a sandwich or a couple of buns or a flask of tea, whatever, something to sustain them. I mean, we weren't in total war. So he gave me 11 slices of dry bread and said, do your best with that, Mr. Sullivan. So I said, I will do my best. So I blew my whistle. I called all the troops in and let them. And let him get on with it. Fortunately, nobody was shot. But he was up next morning to complain to the headquarters. But I'd already put a report in. And they backed me. The company commander backed me up.
Any other examples like that?
If you went out on a recce, say with the company commander, a couple of platoon commanders, two sergeants, you take them in at this stage and leave, if you just go around the corner there, Iron Hands then, but the LEP would give you a glass of something, whatever was going, or if you had lemonade, because it was at the entrance, whatever. But you weren't invited into the bungalow as such at that stage.
Now, so you went to Coolim. Were you in barracks at Coolim?
Oh, no.
Where were you living there then?
Occupying bungalows, headquarters, little, or buildings, anything you could get. Just the company headquarters was in Coolim. The town headquarters always stayed in Dunedin, but that was been connected by radio. And then the platoons, the tentacles were put out. We went out to the Slovenian names, Batajaji, Kampan, Banmol, Varang, and all kinds of names. We were shipped out, and I had a very enjoyable time on Dublin Estate. This planter was great, a Scotchman from the First World War, Major Half Colonel in the First World War. And that was the first time I was invited to a planter's house for the meal. And I took two privates, because I asked him. I said, it's not very good for me to come. I'm platoon commander, sergeant, acting platoon commander. He said, send me. So every time I went there for anything, socially, I took a couple of the lads with me. And that worked great. That was wonderful. He was a great man.
So how did you operate then? You'd move into an area and take up a billet. Would your whole platoon be in sort of one bungalow, or would you be in a couple of bungalows?
Well, we didn't get bungalows. We had little huts, like storage huts, or anything, you know, because it didn't matter. The weather was that warm, and you didn't want bungalows and that. The odd cases, we had bungalows, but predominantly, we'd be on the estate huts, where they had to store in latex or whatever. All the latex would be cleared out, of course.
And would the whole platoon be on it?
Oh, yes.
And you'd be in charge of defending that planter or that estate?
That planter and a flying patrol available for any emergency in that area, which was Redhill. And, as much as you could, this is where you didn't need training, you'd try and get out daily with what we call familiarisation patrols. Get the lads used to walking in the lalang, the elephant grass, as they call it. The terrain.
Well, let's look at those things. The first thing, we'll look at the defence of the estate you were on and the guard of your own huts, I presume. So how would you organise the defence of an estate?
Not hard, because we knew at that stage, and even at the time I left, they wouldn't come in and attack invariably if they saw soldiers. That was a great relief, because you're only talking 30, 35 men at the most. And when you've done all your commitments, you're pretty well stretched. At night time, of course, you have a full picket on. Whatever. At night time, you might have a little dabble, but certainly not by day. So the daytime routine was pretty normal at this stage. We're only a few weeks into Coolim. Pretty PT and morning, breakfast, normal evolutions. Bit of weapon training, not so much weapon training, weapon cleaning and weapon effectiveness. They had to be working. That was the important thing. And then some would go out tenant to do a patrol and let everybody see that we were around, even coming through the villages, let word be out. This was part of the propaganda we played. Get into the there was a tin mine there, we used to always pay a visit there. Sadly, later, we slaughtered at the old European stuff. And generally, familiar yourself with an area that we'd have to do most of his work at night. So at least when we went out at night, we had a good idea where we were, which was a great help. Because later on, sadly, especially the tin mine, we got a horrific call at 11 o'clock at night, get out there as fast as we could. And we did, and we were out there as fast as we could. The manager was smashed a bit dead. His under manager was smashed a bit dead. And three or four of them shot. But the others, their legs had been juggled, their arms had been juggled with iron bars, battered to bits. And all done in a matter of minutes. By the time we got there, all that we could do was throw protective cover around the area till the police came. And we had a good liaison with the police.
I'll come back.